podcast for Friday, July 10th, 2009. This is Steve Borsch, and we are at the Savage Depot Coffee House.
In the corner.
Down in Savage, Minnesota. And with me is...
Tim Elliott.
Tim Elliott.
Graham Thickens.
And Phil Wilson, who these guys to come to the Savage Depot, who are friends of mine. And
that's right.
Feel free to stop by. It's everybody's bistro.
And we're, there's a little advertisement for you there.
And we're wearing
coffee, wine, beer. They got it.
And
it
looks food.
Great. And they do food too.
And yeah,
they do food.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Right.
And what's their website?
TheSavageDepot.com or SavageDepot.com.
Yep. And it's a good site. You can follow them on Twitter and all that good
Facebook,
stuff.
Facebook.
Wow.
Et cetera,
et cetera. I'll definitely friend them up.
And you can see them. See pictures of food.
And maybe we can get out of here without paying a thing.
Oh, my gosh. And if you hear any music in the background, please don't listen to it because we're not going to pay BMI or ASCAP their licensing fees for any music in the background. But so we could talk about a bazillion things, but the number one, in fact, I was stunned on TechMeme when there was this post by Google about the Google Chrome OS, and there were like 8,000 blogs that linked to it. And so it was just, I mean, I haven't seen anything that hot since the iPhone was introduced. If you don't know what Google Chrome OS is, it's Google's attempt to take the Google Chrome browser, put it on Linux, and position it with netbooks to access everything in the cloud. That's the direction of it, and it boy, I'm pumped about the Google Chrome browser. So
yeah.
I can only imagine what this thing's going to end up being.
Yeah, but I have a buddy who said that you know he can't get all excited about Chrome OS because he's more excited about Android for netbooks. So
yeah,
why are some people not that excited?
Well, I think that Android for netbooks is an interesting idea, but until they really change, and maybe someone, since it's open source, maybe someone will do this, change the direction. It's just such a handheld touch. It's sort of like the iPhone OS, if you will, right?
Mm-hmm.
That yeah. I just don't see it translating to netbooks as readily as this Chrome OS idea, which is just basically another Linux distribution that is hardwired with their Chrome browser. And it's supposedly very fast, lightweight, etc. I've been using GOS, which is another distribution that's based upon, I think it's based upon Debian, like Ubuntu is. Anyway, and it is threaded with all the Google apps, but it's a more heavyweight version of Linux. So this looks like it's a lighter weight version and almost the same concept of Mike Arrington's Crunch Pad.
Oh, yeah.
Which is his, you know, version of Linux that only runs basically Firefox. So you have your entire user interface inside Firefox, which is another interesting idea.
So Arrington's turning into a technology vendor? Is that what's happening here? I haven't had a chance
to get the attention and the distribution of the tech community.
Yeah, well, he wrote a post about a year ago, I guess, about how he would like this a touchpad, touchscreen device that would be bigger than an iPhone, but like an iPhone, where you'd use gestures and you would interact with it with your fingers, right? So there would be no keyboard, although there might be a virtual keyboard type of an interface for entering text and such. But there's been a lot of action in as people have kind of taken that idea and have turned it into prototypes, and it looks like it's going to actually be a product that's going to be quite interesting.
So he had, like, volunteers just helping him out on this, or what's the
I think there's maybe a little bit of money behind it. I don't think it's all just open source, but it's been out there, and there have been a lot of, companies that, OEM companies that do, you know, that make laptops and such that have done prototypes, and some of the ones that he's blogged about at least look very interesting. Now, whether or not he can hit the price point that he's talking about, which is $199 or $299, that's another question. I just don't know, because this is going to be imagine your iPhone, but it's going to be like tablet sized. And of course, Apple's supposedly working on the same thing, but that'll probably be $700 or $800.
Is there that much of a market for a big hunk of thing like
that?
But
Apple doesn't think so. Well, but here's what's interesting. So when you look at all the laptops we have here, You know, they're decent size and they're relatively portable, obviously. But then I look at netbooks and I look at the fact that, oh my God, they are so small that I could actually put it into my little zippered folio with the power supply, and now I've got this thing with me all the time that I could just open up and use. It's got a webcam in it, and I mean, you can't watch videos very well and stuff. But
I'm so used to carrying a briefcase with all my other crap in it, I don't care that there's a laptop in there.
I really
make a little difference to me to have a little tiny netbook as opposed to my 13-inch black MacBook in my briefcase, you know.
But most people want, I mean, and the beauty of the iPhone is to be able to have a computer on your hip. So it's there all the time, wherever you are, whatever you're doing. You know, I know that because you guys do it too, watching TV, you know, you're tweeting sometimes about events. You do it a lot with sports
stuff.
How about
driving?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No. If anyone from the state is listening to me, we never do that while we're driving. Unless we're at a stoplight.
Right. I only do that when I'm in California, by the way.
Well, and in California, do as the Romans do, or whatever.
But I think the opportunity for this stuff is the always on, always connected participant universe of people who are online and they're doing all kinds of stuff with all these different places and look at how famous TweetDeck got. But oh my God, I can see everything in one glance because I've got all these columns. People need screen real estate to do that, and they want some light.
Yeah, that's my problem. I don't have enough screen anymore. I got to get a 30-inch monitor, and I'll be damned if I can carry that in my bag.
Right.
I got 10 columns going. It's still not enough, you know? I got to scroll left, right.
Yeah, that's not good. Seismic Desktop, you should try that.
Yeah, and has anybody tried CodeTweet for managing multiple accounts? Did we talk about that?
Yeah, so we talked about that.
And what's that other app? There was some other app I got a beta invite to. Huh?
Hootsuite.
Yeah, you recommended that one, Tim. Yeah, I got to try that. But I got another one that was just for managing multiple Twitter accounts. And I'll be damned if I remember the name of it. But it sounded good. I just haven't tried it yet. Anyway.
Yeah.
Too much going
on. I'll put some of this stuff in the show notes. I have to take show notes.
That would be good. Yeah.
Darn, now I have to take notes. That's no good.
No, that's fine.
I think that the Chrome OS is just yet another way for Google to stream more ads to people. And it's just more evidence that computing is moving into the cloud. So.
And are you running Chrome OS?
No, I've used GeoOS, which is a separate, it's not sponsored by Google, but it has all of the Google apps built into it.
Yeah.
And it's similar in UI to the Mac OS, which I use almost all the time. So it's a lightweight version of Ubuntu, but it's specially formulated with all the Google apps built in. And with Flickr and, you know, YouTube and everything else. So it's sort of, and it's been out for, I don't know, a year, year and a half, something like that. And you can run it as just a live distro, which I do on my PC. So I don't even install it. I just run it right from the DVD.
Right.
You know, boot into it, and you can check it out. And when I'm...
Is that the one that you can boot from a thumb drive?
Yeah, you can do that too.
Okay, all right.
Yep.
Who was that local outfit that did the Mac version, did the plug-in or whatever it was to do Chrome on your Mac? Remember I blogged about them?
Oh, yeah.
The same guys that do Wine, right?
Oh, they've got a funky name. I can't ever
remember. I'll have to find the... Because we did a post on Minovate, right? Or you did.
Yeah, I think I did, yeah.
They're over in St. Paul, as I recall.
They all blend together. No, I thought they were downtown Minneapolis, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, there still is no... Chrome browser for the Mac from Google, right?
Google is developing it. It's supposed to come out sometime later this year.
They've got an alpha version that they actually are very clear about warning. You know,
could crash your whole system.
Let you have a propeller and a big one.
Permanently in your head. Do not even think about trying this.
Yeah, because I'm sure they do installs on your system that are bad. The thing that I love about the concept behind Chrome is the single tab instance that if you're running an app inside of Chrome and it crashes, then it doesn't take down the whole browser. It just takes down that tab.
Ooh,
so they each run independently and individually.
That. Well, yeah.
Because even with Firefox 3.5, I mean, I use Firefox. Sometimes I'll have three windows open. Each one of them has 20, 25 tabs in there. which is just, I know it's insane and all of that, but I need the workspace. And
how much memory do you have? I mean, how much RAM do you have?
I got 8 gigs of RAM. This isn't my home machine,
right?
Which is the only place that I do it, because I got a big display. But the point, though, is that that's what's happening. That's how people are working, as we're doing more and more things in the cloud. And so the other night I was uploading a 1.58 gigabyte file, a video file, to be transcoded at Vimeo. And yeah, I know. And so doing
and I'm
it,
sure it was a home movie.
Yes, right.
That he shot himself.
Sleeping. It was me sleeping. The point is that while it was going, and I was doing it in Safari as an individual process, I was in Firefox and it crashed. And it brought down the entire browser. All three windows, 75 tabs, the whole thing. Now, I have the recovery feature, but if I had anything actively going on inside of Firefox, it would have killed it. So that's the sort of thing that, you know, you think about the impact that Google Chrome already, but will have, you know, that concept is going to be huge in cloud computing.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, I can't wait till it comes to the Mac.
Yeah.
For real, yeah.
Yeah, it'll be there.
That's why I don't pay much attention to it, to be quite honest. Well, I have friends on Windows machines that use it all the time, but I don't have much to do with those people, so.
All right. Well.
Oh, that's right. You're a...
Oh, and I have to use Windows.
Guy.
Yeah, yeah.
He's bi.
Well, I run
Parallels on my Mac.
You're just experimenting. That's not really being bi.
That's true. Yeah.
Well, it's the VMware Fusion, right? That a lot of guys use too.
That's another good one.
The Sun has one that's free. That's quite good as well.
What's that called?
What is it called? Virtual something? Hmm. I don't know. It's Sun.
Does it run on the Mac?
Yeah. It's basically VMware Fusion from Sun for free. Hmm. I have it at home. Ah, what is it? I use Fusion because I
is good
because I bought it a couple years ago and it's really good. The VMware
free is good. I went to use my new version of Pages today that I had a 30-day trial to that a client had me using. And now they want $79 and I have to update one stupid little file from my wife's business card. You know, she said, don't spend $79 to do that. It's like, well, crap. You know, anyway, that's...
Yeah, but you're living outside economic realities, Grant.
Yeah, I am.
Don't
rub it in.
Guys, on a local level, I wanted to chat a little bit about, and I don't know who has seen it here or who hasn't, but they... yesterday, I think it was the day before yesterday, this week anyway, Best Buy has been looking for a
senior manager of emerging media,
who can basically keep their finger on the pulse of what's going on in emerging media. And they've posted the position a couple of different times, and they've just recently decided to...
Crowdsource
the job description. They're using Best Buy ID Exchange for you to go on and help them write the job description of what a manager of emerging media would have, what their responsibilities would be. What do you guys think of that?
Well, the biggest question I have is that Steve Bent's old position. You know, he left and went to Microsoft.
Oh yeah, I wonder.
Yeah, he's already moved out to Redmond, but nobody ever explained whether that's his position or some new position.
Well, they say it's a new position.
Oh, well,
that's why they're doing it. Yeah.
Yeah. You could never replace Steve anyway. But I was going to say it's interesting right away that they'd be hiring for a new position when they've spent so much time cutting back for the last several months. But that just tells you about what online means to them. Yeah.
Well, they posted it one time to Standard. You know, this is the oversight, and then they reposted it with the concept of, you know, do you blog regularly and do you have at least 250 followers on Twitter, which was an interesting experience.
Yeah, because my grandma has 250.
Yeah, I was going to say 250. Yeah. That's low.
What? Walk in the park.
Yeah, that would be my first.
Well,
piece
again,
of
they
in a job description. Yeah. Up that puppy.
Yeah. So anyway, I thought it was kind of interesting, and I know that got a lot of press with the recruiters.
Well, there's a winery out in California that's been doing a similar job search. It's Murphy Good, and you probably read about it or heard about it. And what they've done is they've taken 2,000 applicants. They've whittled it down first to 50. They had over 900 YouTube videos submitted, and now they're down to 10, and they're going to interview them next week, I believe, in California, and then choose someone to basically work for 6 months for $10,000 a month to basically be their social media correspondent. Hmm. What's interesting about it is that it's not a popularity contest. They had a lot of people that were very well known that had very large followings on Twitter that didn't make it in the top 50. And in fact, Kevin Rose tweeted, and then it got dug up pretty high on Dig.
Sure.
That Martin Sargent, who used to be on Tech TV, didn't get picked, and he was the number one guy with votes of 7,000 votes or 6,000 votes or whatever. So they're obviously, I think, looking for someone that not necessarily has the popularity, but it's someone that has all of the attributes that they're looking
right.
for.
It's at least a player.
Yeah.
And it understands the space.
But understands the space, but also maybe has significant background in other disciplines.
Right, but as I look at the top 10 of the finalists, all of them are not people that you would immediately say, hey, this would be perfect. I mean, they're all people that you would actually hire. I mean, so this looks to me like it's not a six-month gig, it's a longer term, but the first 6 months you get paid more.
Right, yeah.
And then they'll offer that person, a longer term kind of a thing. And I think that's generated a ton of PR. So from a PR perspective, it's been really good for this winery, and it's really put them on the social media map in the wine space. I think Best Buy is doing a similar kind of thing here, where they put it out there. There was a lot of response just from the job posting itself in the blogosphere, and they thought, well, geez, why don't we just get in on some of that too, and why don't we create more conversation?
Well, I think it kind of accomplishes two things for Best Buy. It helps them find or define their search a little bit, which usually happens with companies when they go through the interview process. You know, if you interview a bunch of folks, we know companies out there that marketing architects that really seems to interview a lot of people but not hire anybody, because I think that they're constantly redefining what that job is going to be, and so I think they cut that issue out by using Idea Exchange, but they also bring a little bit more attention to a fairly new product for them, which is the Idea Exchange. So they get some traffic into that as well, and by involving the PR community, they really kind of get more PR. So I think it's a great idea. But it was just—it's interesting to see. And I guess from my understanding, they'll probably repost the position with the new job description sometime, and the later part of July. So.
Huh. Well, I'll have to make sure I go into their Idea Exchange and really tweak it.
So I'm the only candidate
that really makes sense for me.
That must be a wine aficionado.
With V-shaped body and six-pack abs.
Drinks a case of wine a week.
Preferably commutes from South
Dakota. Yeah, I got an idea. I think they should hire the Minovate team to do that job.
There we go.
Somebody should.
There it is. There it is. A committee job.
Yeah.
Clearly a lot would get done.
It's really bureaucracy, baby.
What's interesting is the conversation we had before we started the podcast about the state of TV and radio, and we could extend that to newspapers. And everybody's having the same challenges and difficulties in figuring out where do we go next, and where's the market going, and where are people going. And every single time I walk into a Best Buy and I look at, even though it's less now, but I look at all of the floor space devoted to CDs and movies, and I think, they've made strategic investments in Napster and in that video, is it Move Networks, or the video investment they made, and Speakeasy, they bought the ISP, the only ISP that gets it in the entire country. They've made all these strategic moves, but I haven't really seen them capitalize on any distribution or selling of media in any new ways and so forth. And that's what I'm kind of watching for.
I think that their announcement yesterday with TiVo is really kind of the next strategic move that Best Buy will be looking back in 5 years and saying, well, Best Buy made a move from being a retailer to being someone that is really embedded in the digital lifestyle, that is going to be making money on the metadata from their customers, but also the consumption habits of their customers, because in the retail work that I do, there was an analyst that we just did a video with who basically points out the Best Buy Rewards program as being one of the most successful loyalty programs, and the reason that they took it from a subscription-only kind of a thing to everybody for free was because they noticed that people that were in that program, and they made millions of dollars on when you had to like pay dues to get the benefits. But they noticed that those customers were such better customers than anybody else, that if they expanded it, the whole would be, you know, they would make more and more money selling it. So I think that they are understanding their customers very well, intimately, and that they're going to be really mining that data and then going back to the manufacturers and the people that make all the devices and marketing. You know, they're going to become like a direct marketing organization.
Well, and you talked about because I've gotten into these discussions with people sort of outside of new media and the internet and so forth, talking about Best Buy and all of that. And there's so many people that still look at them as a place to go buy white goods, refrigerators and stuff, or televisions. In other words, passive recipient type of consumption versus what I am starting to really see Best Buy turn into is more of that, and on the production side, so that they're understanding user generated content. And you know, you just go in and look at the video camera array. I mean, they're carrying all of the low end cameras, you know, from Flip to Casio to and their salespeople have been pointing out the video capabilities of their snapshot cameras. Oh, by the way, you might want to step up to that, because I had a guy do that.
You can post to YouTube right away.
But what he did, which I thought was brilliant, is he said, yeah, but you know, that one's 189, but if you buy this one for 240, it does high def 16 by 9 production. So salespeople get it.
They get the user-generated content thing. I mean, it's becoming apparent that they really do know where things are going. So
Well, it'll be fun to watch that job, see what happens there.
Well, I think it's going to be interesting to watch the company as they're moving now under, you know, new CEO, and I think they're really changing direction pretty dramatically.
Yeah.
Well, they seem to be exploring the changing of direction. I don't know if they're necessarily.
Yeah. Well, it's a big ship.
I don't think. Yeah, it's a big old ship.
But they're launching a bunch of lifeboats and PT boats alongside.
Where boats the roadmap alongside is.
Look what they did with that EQ Life strategy, which was not successful.
Didn't pan out,
but they learned from it.
We went into a couple of the stores, one in Edina and another one on Grand Avenue. My wife and I did, and she's an old retailer from Target, so she loves retail and room and board. She was a GM at room and board, but there's no question that they really tried to hit the sweet spot there, and it wasn't successful, but they did it. I mean, that's the key.
They tried it.
They tried it. They're trying these different strategies.
And that really, there needs to be more of that, not only in the retail space, but in American business in general, because I think that the American business has really turned its back a little bit on innovation. They haven't really tried new things. It's easy, when you've got a business plan that's working, to not be out there investigating where the next step is.
But it's hard to disrupt yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
They've got a really tough business model, because on one side they're competing with Walmart, basically, and Target to a lesser degree, and Amazon.com. Yeah, so they've got these different competitive
and Dell
dynamics.
And, you know, they've got all they run scared every day. That's the way, you know, when you hear them talk about what it's like to be at Best Buy, is they're worried every day that somebody's going to kill them.
Well,
and that's the way they've always operated.
The accelerated the acceleration of competitors coming in.
It never stops.
It's a much quicker turn now. I mean, you don't have to build a plant now.
Yep.
You build a space.
But how many people have you talked to, though? I mean, there's so much interest in social media specifically, but you guys have been a lot of the more meme events than I have. And the amount of interest there from traditional companies on stepping in, but I don't hear and or don't see a lot of activity in Minnesota companies other than Best Buy, General Mills. I know of people who are in that role at 3M and Medtronic and other of the major companies, but they have nothing that's really overt. I don't know if you guys have heard much about, well, in Land O'Lakes, Rick Mott.
Oh, sure. Medtronic's get some iPhone apps, at least one coming that, in the medical
space. Yeah, the defibrillator.
Well, it'll come. I'm not a pacemaker. You just plant that iPhone.
There you go. You keep it with you. You have a little
stick
plug.
Stick it under your arm.
Right, exactly.
Just strap it under your arm, baby. And there are some things in the works out there that are coming from the different local companies. But I was going to say, getting back to Best Buy, I'm going to talk to Steve Bent this afternoon and find out what life is like out at Microsoft for him so far. And people were saying, gee, what's Gary Kohling going to do now? You know, that his sidekick is gone. But we'll see Gary on Monday at the big PR 2.0 event where Jason Kinsler from Pitch Engine is speaking, which I blogged about on Minovate last night. So have talked to Gary on Monday, and we'll see what's happening with both those guys. So.
Gary's actually got two gigs next week. He's doing the PR 2.0, but he's also doing something for me for the Conclave, which is a broadcast convention.
Oh, very cool. What day is that?
That's a convention thing. It's not open to the public.
Oh, it's not. But so you won't be blogging about it.
So it's like one of those secret society things?
We have a handshake and everything.
Like the Mason. Okay.
We wear funny hats, too.
He's also
these rituals. They all wear robes.
He's speaking to broadcasters on increasing signal strength with social media. So
got it.
That sounds good.
Well, what I've been waiting for is an email from Doug Olson, my buddy that is the GM for the Design Tools Group for Microsoft, that had built an office here for an engineering office.
Downtown St. Paul.
And he tweeted last night that tomorrow, meaning today, Friday, that everything he came to Microsoft to accomplish is being launched today.
Yeah, what's this big announcement? I saw Scoble said he was under embargo the other day.
Right.
What the hell's going on?
Well, and I sent Doug a
sometimes
DM.
Sometimes I think Scoble should always be under embargo.
Yeah,
besides that.
Right. But I sent Doug a direct message on Twitter and go, okay, not that I'm asking for a scoop, but at least tell me what the hell's going on.
Right.
So he said he'd email me and then we could connect up today. So I'm hoping to do that.
Is that news going to drop today or Monday?
It's supposedly dropping today.
Oh, okay. Well, then you're not going to be scooped. Get a scoop then.
He might get a 5-second lead.
Oh, I do.
Right.
How fast can you post on Minovate if he gives you a 5-second lead?
I'll just stop. I'll just change the date and publish it yesterday.
Like you're so
smart. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I break embargoes just like it. Doesn't break embargoes
right.
Now.
That's right. That's right. That would get him in trouble.
I wouldn't do that to you, Doug.
No, not at all.
Yeah. So it'd be interesting to see what they're going to do because it's the whole thing with. I don't know if you've seen some of the row about. I know we talked about this and it was off the geek meter. young lady just. In case everyone hears the clink of advice, young lady just brought us some glasses of water.
We got to do more podcasts like
vodka.
This where we get waited on. Is this straight vodka?
Rather than my wife going, "What the hell are you going to be done in there, damn it?" Anyway.
Oh, I get that in a different room.
I love that quote you posted from Steve Martin. I had never heard that one before.
Which one?
Do you know that look women get when they want to have sex? Me neither.
Yeah.
I had never heard that Steve Martin quote before.
Oh, he is just, honestly, guys. Some of his old stuff. I've got all his old stuff. And And I'll see that one posted on comic Twitter later.
Yeah, he was on Prairie Home Companion a couple weeks ago.
Was he really?
Yeah, yeah. It was the one before the 4th of July.
Right.
And it was out in, at Tanglewood in Mass.
Oh.
And he was on with his band that he plays with, playing banjo. And it was funny.
I want to see that.
It was funny because my son was in the car when we were driving listening to it, and he said, so Steve Martin plays banjo, and I said, yeah, he plays banjo, you know. And I pulled out my old record when I got home and played it, and it, you know, he had this old, you know, you can't play a sad song on banjo.
Yeah.
But he actually, he's quite good.
Well, so right, the Prairie Home Companion doesn't do a full length podcast, do they?
No, just they only release the Nudes from Lake World.
Yeah. Which is why all the affiliates love Turks and Healers, because
sure, they make a lot of money.
Can't get it anywhere but my station. So
right. Well, and what was interesting, speaking of Steve Martin,
and wishing
that I had cameras and you know, recording capability like we have now. When I was in college, spent my sophomore year in Pioneer Dorm, and a bunch of us listened to this guy named Steve Martin, and he was on The Tonight Show. We used to play Beer Bridge every Friday night, and so we were watching The Tonight Show, and here's Steve Martin. Well, one of the guys said, hey, guess what? He's coming to the Hippogriff, which was out on 394 and 169.
I remember the name of that Gillard Park. Oh, yeah.
Those white buildings.
Yeah.
And so the four of us went out, and I was sitting from here to maybe 25 feet away from Steve Martin when he did the entire bit. Now, put that into context of ending up seeing him at the St. Paul Civic Center in a crowd of about, I don't know how many, tens of thousands of people with the white suit and the arrow through his head, and everybody walking through the crowd with balloon animals and white arrows and all of that.
You saw him when he was nothing.
Yeah.
I'd love to see a video of that.
So would I.
But I think about how,
it was before video cameras were invented, though.
Yeah, that's right.
It was.
Well, I'd like to see
there was some guy underneath the hood pranking.
I'm really dating myself, I know.
Mm.
Well, we should probably wind down here, gentlemen.
We'll get some work done. Huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, thanks very much for setting it up here at Savage Depot. You know,
well, thanks for having it. Yeah, this has been great, and the people here are phenomenal. Seriously, it's a great, the ambiance is great.
Yeah, no, I'm going to come back here.
Yeah. I might come back and drink wine here.
Let me know.
Bring the good stuff.
Yeah. they have actually some pretty good stuff.
You referenced it next week, PR 2.0. Mm-hmm. That's going on WordPress.
End of the month.
End of the month.
Yeah.
So next SMB is...
July 31st is the tentative date, Rick Mon told me yesterday. So that's a Friday, I believe.
And have you heard something about Minibar?
Yeah, Minibar, we're hoping, is going to be in September, but they're still trying to find a venue, Ben Edwards tells me. And we're hoping maybe Friday, September the 25th, but that's totally, totally tentative until they do score a venue.
Great. So lots going on in the community. So, thanks very much.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Have a good
week. Over and out.